Hey everybody, welcome back to this. I'm your host, Shauna Griffiths, and as always, we're having a real talk with a real leader, and we're breaking down a hot topic to help you take your game to the next level. Today's episode is all about breaking down more than representation and leadership in sports. Our guest is my dear friend, Raven Jemison. Raven, thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you for having me, Sean. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Yeah. Just like you said, just dropping right into the conversation. So folks, Raven is one of the hottest names in sports business. She is very humble, I swear. So she's probably like, okay, not me. But she is. She is currently in the seat of President of Business Operations for the NWSL team, Kansas City Current. You have an incredible background in sports, in the executive positions, which we'll get into. You are the author of literally what is my favorite book. I keep it on my desk all the time. Folks, if you're watching this, I'm holding it up. More Than Representation, The Cheat Codes to Own Your Seat at the Table. So we're going to get into that. I truly love it. I read it twice, which I told you the other day, Raven. I read it on a plane ride the other day for the second time. And Raven is also one of the first draft class leadership athletes, which I'm honored to have you part of that crew. So you have a game tomorrow. You've made this, fit this into the schedule. So talk to us about what's going on with the Kansas City Current right now.
Yeah, we are cooking. So tomorrow's our last regular season home match. And of course, all the things that go into that, which is very exciting. Desi Scott, one of our beloved athletes, is retiring and we're going to honor her tomorrow. So there's just a lot happening, but we're also preparing to kind of turn the page on what is the playoffs. And then we're going to be hosting the Big 12 Women's Soccer Championship starting in a couple of weeks. So there's a lot happening and I probably wouldn't want it any other way, but it's a lot going on, but it is exactly the vision playing itself out, and it's been an honor to be a part of it.
That's incredible. I actually saw that recently about her retirement and how, you know, you all honoring her, which is so cool to see. And it's great for people in the audience to remember, like, when you're ahead of a professional sports team, usually that venue is doing other things when it's not in use for the team. So, you know, you speaking about the other things that are going on there, it's all under your watch. So definitely a lot going on.
No pressure. Thank you for that. Reminding me.
Exactly. Keep it cool as always, Raven. So folks in the audience, I always tell you how I know my guests. Raven and I have a mutual friend, Shimmy Miller, who was a very successful women's basketball college coach, caught her dream, I will say, of becoming a television broadcaster, studio analyst. She was part of the University of Michigan women's basketball team, which I was also a part of. She was a couple years ahead of me. And I mean, I was always like just in awe of her. Like to this day, I could hear her laugh when I think about her. She's amazing. She's also a first draft class leadership athlete. I actually never asked you, how do you two know each other?
So it's because I think the universe just pulls the right people into my circle. Lisa Byington is the first ever female play-by-play announcer for the NBA, for an NBA team. And I worked for the Milwaukee Bucks. And Lisa came on board when I was there as the number two. And then, of course, I meet Lisa. She's phenomenal. And I invite, I think there was a Lizzo concert, actually. We had a Lizzo concert at Fiserv Forum. And I said, Lisa, bring Shimmy because I'd love to meet her. When they got engaged, I sent them a custom pair of blazers, sneakers, with their engagement date on it. And I was like, it's probably fitting that I should meet her. So we met Lizzo. And the rest is history, because if you know Shimmy and you know Lisa, they are everything that they are slated to be. There's no, they are genuine, amazing humans. And so that's how I know Shimmy, and the rest is history.
That makes so much sense. No, I don't even know why I didn't connect those dots, but it makes so much sense. It actually also reminds me of the first time that we talked when you were your number two position, as you said, executive vice president of the Milwaukee Bucks. And Shimmy was like, oh yeah, why don't you meet my friend Raven? And I was like, okay, at first. And I was like, wait, you mean the Raven?
No, the Raven. It's just Raven. Just
no, but that's actually why I said it, is because like that's actually why I've been so compelled to have you on the show. Like once I got to know you and everything, it was like when folks, to know Raven is to completely understand your value about being your authentic self. So, you know, again, I was like, oh, the Raven, I get on the call with you, and you automatically, I could just drop into the conversation just like today, you know, because it's just two people having an authentic conversation. And too many times, I think we think about someone in a leadership seat, whether it's because they operate that way or just we have preconceived notions, that there's going to be this front there, that there's some game being played. And so, you know, part of why I wanted to have you on the show is because like your commitment to authenticity is something that I've been championing for a while, as you know. And so I want to make sure it gets shared more. And, you know, I'll reference something in the book so the audience can hear. One thing that you wrote was you were committed to find out who you were, owning and taking up space as yourself. And the compliment to that you also wrote is that the energy that it takes to be someone else is exhausting. And I think so many of us can feel that way. So before I go on to the other reasons, I would love for you just to talk about that a bit.
Yeah, it's every time I hear that repeated back to me, because that's been something that people have connected to, the labor that it takes to sit in, name it, a boardroom or you're meeting with a client or whatever it was, because I was in sales when I came out and I was in sales leadership. You're thinking about how someone is interpreting you. Like, am I giving the signs away that I'm queer, that I really don't want to be in this blouse and heels, and I really am feeling uncomfortable in my skin right now? And so you're thinking about that. Then you're thinking about yourself as a Black woman and all the things that they might be thinking. Am I going to be too loud? Are they going to think that I'm aggressive? Like, there's just so much work that goes into all those thoughts while you're also trying to have a conversation to either sell something or to build a relationship. So the thing that I am just reminded of is like, one, and we're probably going to talk about this, I was made this way for a reason, right? And I only get one shot at this life. So the more time that I spend trying to be somebody else, the less I get to enjoy life as the person that I was designed to be. So, and I want to make sure that everybody understands, this isn't like a conversation I had with myself on a Monday and Tuesday, I walk into the office with the sneakers and the jeans on, but it is a conversation I had with myself to start that self-discovery that is, I think, required to make sure that you are your authentic self as much as you can be, so that the labor that is done is the labor that gets you ahead and not keeps you kind of in that lane, whatever that lane is.
I love the way you speak about that. It resonates with me so much. And I'm smiling as I did, because at one point when you were saying that, because like that's something that I talk about a lot, is what I know is that I only have one shot at this life.
Yeah.
So if I am fronting, if I'm like not being true to myself, I'm just wasting time and energy on this planet. And, you know, so I really, again, as I was reading your book, I'm like, yes, yes, you're like truly in my bones resonating with so much that you're talking about. And as I see you like walking this planet, you know, it's so refreshing to see again. And I can't stress enough, like someone who's in the seat that you occupy in business. And, you know, you haven't done it just once, as we'll talk about later, NFL, notoriously known as male, white, straight, the NBA, the NHL, the MLB, all, you know, have that reputation. So when you talk about that exhausting, it's literally, and I think you write about this, an extra job. And that's what I want people to understand, if they're not familiar with this concept or don't quite understand it. It literally is another job that you have to do on top of your regular job.
That's it. You are exactly right. And I also bring up the fact that if you don't do the work to discover that, whoever you are, right?
Yeah.
Whoever you want to be in the world, the world will tell you.
Yeah, 100%.
It will tell you quickly because of the things you just mentioned, because you're in spaces where there's primarily male, primarily white male, primarily older white male. Yeah. You will get pigeonholed into what they say you are. And I don't know that everybody's doing it intentionally, but that's just kind of society. So yeah, it is real work. And I talk in the book about respectability politics and code switching, which still exists today.
Yes.
For myself, there are worlds in which I have to constantly think, okay, is this going to be interpreted a certain way if I say this? So there's always that second guessing. But I will say it's less and less, because truthfully, what you see is what you get. It's interesting that we're talking about this piece because, excuse me, I was at an executive chamber breakfast yesterday, and it was a room of 60 to 70 presidents and CEOs here in Kansas City. And, you know, I walk in the room and everybody's got on their like suits and they're very like buttoned up and their ties. And I'm one of four honorees because they host this every quarter for new presidents and CEOs in the region. And I walk in and I have on a blazer that's got a hood and like jeans and sneakers, right? Because that's me. Like, yeah. I'm not going to pretend to be anyone else just because I'm in that room. And then there's a picture taken of the honorees. And so here you have, and I sent this picture to my mom, here you have this image, and I'll send it to you when we're done.
Please.
And I'm also the shortest person. So I just kind of like I'm in the center of this photo, just looking like me, and everybody else is like super, what you would call polished. And I sent it to my mom and she's like, I just love that you're just being yourself in that room. And I was like, that's it. That's all I needed to hear. Right. Yeah. Cause when I saw the picture, I was like, man, should I have dressed up more for this? So to that point about, it's not always that I'm so like on top of being authentic. There is some second guessing, but back to the piece about the book and finding your people. When you have people in your corner that when you're second guessing yourself, it reminds you of how you're blessed to be in the position that you're in, to be authentically yourself. That perspective is a gift that you definitely cherish.
Yeah, absolutely. And folks, I will tell you, when we started this, I was like having my own moments of insecurity. I'm like, I'm having you on the show and everything. And I love what we're each other's people, right? And you're like, what the hell, Shauna? Who are you? So, you know, again, folks, what we're talking about here is something that, while I think it's something that each of us are known for, it's something that people say to me is my authenticity. It's just who I am, how I show up. Same for you. And it is something that we practice, even if it's something that is just part of who you are, we still practice it. And so that's part of the whole thing about the leadership athlete. You know, it's like, this is a daily practice that I think won't ever go away. Because some of those things that we face will never go away.
That's right.
So yeah, absolutely. So the another reason why I really wanted you on the show is your commitment to creating positive impact, which is obviously the company that I created is called SLG Impact for a reason. I wanted to be able to create something and a way of, you know, doing business that is authentically me. And in the book you write that you felt a responsibility to be a vessel to learn from. And I love that part too, because it's again, it's just, it comes across authentically. It's the way you go about, which is partly the reason why you're so authentic. It's the reason why you operate the way you do. It also does not mean that you're on some like pedestal teaching people. It's so much of, I think, and in your book has comes across is a lot of what you do teach and you live is because of what you've learned and what you've gone through, which makes it so much more relatable. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on that part.
Yeah. So there's phases to this. When I was coming up through the ranks and I was a leader, I thought that being a leader was solely about how you're successful at work, right? I'm going to coach you to be successful at work. Here's how you sell this thing. Here's how you show up in a room to have executive presence, right? It was very methodical.
Right.
But then as I started to, you know, kind of live in the truth that I am a Black queer woman and I'm just going to own it, I realized that people were coming to me and asking me different types of questions, which led me to write this book eventually. And it was like, wait a minute, how are you in this room as yourself and coming out, you know, successful with your ideas being pushed through and people listening?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, okay, so it seems like people are looking and watching me in a different way that's not solely how I do business better. Does that make sense?
Oh, it's totally. More like
I exist in this way. And so I used to think of it as a burden because I'm like, wait a minute. I'm very private. And before I wrote this book, few people knew a lot about me, and that was intentional. But it was intentional that I didn't want people to know my how. I didn't want to give the cheat codes. I didn't want to, like, hey, we're not all the same. Figure out your own path. And then I eventually, not quite to that degree, but then I eventually said, okay, there's something to this leadership that is between the lines that I'm not picking up on. People are listening to me and watching me and asking me certain questions that, one, I need to have an answer for, and two, I need to lean into, because it's my, I feel a sense of responsibility to bring people up with me. If I am in this seat and, you know, I leave the Kansas City Current sometime from now, and there's not more diversity in women's soccer, there's not more women leaders and those who can drive the needle and move the needle in the right way, then I have failed. So now I see it as like a badge of honor. I just had a conversation with someone who had read my book, and she had it like all post-it noted. I was like, oh my God, this is like...
It's my post-it noted, underlined, stars.
And we're having a conversation. She's in a totally different industry. And it was just it was a great conversation. I was like, the reason I wrote this book was exactly for this, so people could see themselves in it and learn from my experience. And that vessel that you talk about is, it doesn't have to be, hey, everybody pull up your chair so I can pull out a whiteboard and tell you what I learned today. It is that moment where you pull one of your leaders aside and just, one, ask how you're doing, and two, tell me what's on your mind and what's troubling you these days. And then telling them how I handle those things. Mm-hmm. Or if there's something personal that they're going through, asking that next level of question. Is there something I can help you with? If not, like, what do you need from me? So there's just, sometimes teaching is by example and not by direct conversation. So I hold that responsibility very, very high. Where it used to be like, oh God, I have to be perfect. I have to say the right things. I have to do the right things. And sometimes being a vessel to learn from is also learning what not to do. Mm-hmm. And I've been hopefully mature enough to know when I've made mistakes and said, guys, don't do what I did here.
I can't tell you how many times I, like, along the way, I've said to people, like, let me help you out here. I'm going to tell you what I did so that you don't have to go through that painful experience.
Yeah.
It's just, and I think that there's this, again, going back to the purpose and like walking this face of this earth and this one chance that we have, that's part of just sharing those things and wanting to see something different in the people around you than what you experience. You know, some of us, we had really great, you know, other people around us, as you talk about in their advocates. And I love the stories that you tell in that. You know, Matt Pizarris, who worked with you at the Bucks, was my boss at the Nets. And like, what an incredible, you know, resource and advocate. I also had some not so great people. So, you know, a lot of times, to your point, you learn sometimes when you have people who are in seats around you that aren't the things that we're talking about today. It's actually a really great learning experience because you're like, oh, sure as hell, no, I don't want to be that.
That part. Yes, absolutely agree. We are on the same page. You can learn from everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And when you were talking about what you did a minute ago, one thing I want to just call out for the audience is your level of curiosity. Mm-hmm. And so when you are describing when you're working with people, you're actually asking them questions. How are you doing? What do you need from me? I think that's actually a really rare thing for a lot of people in leadership seats to ask. Mm-hmm. How can I help you? Yeah. What's in your way that I can get out of? Like, how are you? That genuine curiosity, I think, is so empowering and frankly surprises people sometimes.
What's so interesting is how it surprises people. Yeah. The job of a leader is to be a resource. So right. If you surround yourself with the right people, asking that next level of question of how can I help you or what do you need, hopefully they give you an answer back. And then you're you're a successful business. So that's only really possible if you have the right leaders in place. Because if you go to someone and say, what do I need? It could become a complaining session. And what I say is complaints are not conversation, solutions are. So you got to be careful in how you position. You need to know your team. But yeah, I don't know every single thing about finance or every single thing about marketing or every single thing about tech. So I need to be curious, right? Because I need to understand my job as a leader. What do I need to give them so we can all be successful? I'm also like nosy. And I'm always like, okay, there's something missing here. And either it's you have to find what that is or it's your job. But either way, we have to ask the question of what it is that it's not getting us to name the goal. So yeah, I've always kind of been curious just because I want to be successful. And I feel like you're kind of stuck in the muck of, I know everything. What kind of life is that? Like whoever those people are that know everything, I'm just like, what are you doing every day? Are you like not read or like what does that look like for you? So if you ever talk to anybody who knows everything, it's always interesting when you ask that question. But it's a long-winded way of me saying I am curious 100%. I have an interview communication style. When I meet people for the first time, I end up asking them a lot of questions and they ask me nothing, which is great for me because I can remain private and like kind of mysterious. But that's just how I've been. I've always asked questions of people because I just want to get to know them genuinely.
Yeah.
And that goes to business too. I want to get to know how I can help you genuinely. So there's no excuse. So when we can hit this mark together.
Right. Folks, I'm going to repeat that. Just again, as you're listening to this, this is all about, I have people on here to have authentic conversations with impactful leaders. So again, Raven is talking about being genuinely curious, asking questions and actively listening, because that is part of the recipe for moving forward and hitting targets and winning, finding ways to win together. It is not a one-sided thing. So thank you for talking through that. The last thing before we get on to, I want to have you share about your career story, is More Than Representation, the title of the book. That is another reason why I have felt so compelled to have you on the show, because I started this show during the pandemic when I was seeing people from marginalized communities just get so attacked. I'm like, I have to do more as a straight, white, middle-aged woman than just call on my friends who are in those parts of the communities and try to be supportive. So I created this show in large part to help elevate diverse, authentic leaders, to show people that people like this do exist, and as a woman, I'll say this, when I see you as a woman in your seat, I'm like, oh shit, that's actually possible. We could do this. Another woman could do this. So, it's just been everything I can do to help showcase that. So I would just love for you to talk about that topic, the More Than Representation.
Yeah. So the book my wife, April, she is the real writer. She's the real artist in the family. But we were workshopping titles for the book. And there was various titles. But the one that jumped out was More Than Representation, because it meant two different things, depending on the audience reading the book. More Than Representation, I felt like for so long, especially when I got the Bucks role, it was, oh my God, it's so good to see you sitting in the seat. Representation matters. I can't, every week I would hear that. And I'm like, yeah, it matters. But what was missing was the access to information and how to get to the seat. So I would say representation matters, but access matters more. Mm-hmm. And if me, back to your previous question, if me in this seat, if I am not giving others the cheat codes to say, well, here's how I got here, that access to information, that's the real impact. And that's the real solution to representing in a seat. So that's one title. The second title meaning is that for those who are looking at me as a checked box, whether it's I'm a Black woman, I'm a woman, I'm queer, if you're looking at me as someone who's going to check a box for you, I need you to know that I'm more than that. So I'm more than representing those checkboxes for you. I am actually a qualified normal, somewhat human, and I can add value to your company. So there's two different meanings to that title. And I have found what's interesting after many white males that I worked with have read this book, they're like, wow, I had no idea that you were going through this when we were working together. I had no idea that this was happening and that someone said that to you. Did you not feel comfortable telling me that? Like, there's been really good dialogue around those in the majority reading this book. So it's been a welcome surprise. And I think it's also helping them lead differently, right? To be maybe a little bit more compassionate and empathetic when you're leading a diverse coalition of folks who might not look like you or have your experiences. They might be experiencing something totally different, even though they're smiling at work, even though they're productive at work. So it's been a great, it's been a almost a year now since it's been published, some great dialogue around it.
Yeah. I'm so glad you talked about that, because in the book, when you talk about who it's for, which you actually, I'm going to pause there. Tell us who you wrote in the book, who it's for, because I believe, to your point, it's so important for others, other people to read it as well. So talk about who the book is for.
Yeah. So I wrote it when I was writing the introduction, I wrote it for people who look like me, love like me, who might be Black, queer woman, who might fit into a marginalized community and feel like there's a gap in information. So that's who I wrote it for. It wasn't until after the book was published, even though those titles had two different meanings for me, it wasn't until after the book was published that I had some of this dialogue with those who you say probably for as well. Oh, okay. So there's a version two coming. There's going to be another version coming.
Oh my gosh. I'm so excited for that. And I just, when I was reading it, I was thinking, because I don't represent all of the different parts that you bring to the table. And so when I was reading it, it doesn't matter who my friends have been and experiences I've had, reading you talk through it, your voice was playing in my head as every time I read it, it is just so informative. And it's to your point, it does help. It helped me to understand in a new way. It helped me. And so I can't tell you how many people I've recommended to it. I told you when I posted about it, my friend Scott Zimmerman was like, right away, he ordered it immediately and he's read it and he, you know, and he shared the same thing. So, you know, I do think, you know, folks who are listening to this, it is a great book if you don't, you know, if you don't necessarily look or love or, you know, represent as Raven does. So, and we talked about the cheat codes a lot. So I would really like to talk about two of them, folks. You need to buy the book to get all four. So two I want to talk about is, and we probably hit a lot on this. So, know yourself, is to know your worth. And then the other one, which kind of hit like really hard for me, which we'll talk about in a minute, is understand that politics isn't only or politicians. So hit on the first one here. Is there anything more you want to say about knowing yourself is to know your worth?
Yeah, I'll only just add what I say to every group of individuals I speak to now is that piece that we talked about earlier is do the work to find out who you are. And that work is not easy work. That work for me came with a lot of pain and tears and, you know, sleepless nights and all the things, but you're better for it. And what I'm finding about this generation is coming up through the ranks now, they're doing the work. And that's exciting for me to see. And I just implore people to know who they are, because it leads to that fourth cheat code about politics.
Yeah.
Because when you know who you are, the politics that you have to play, because you do have to play them. And I want everybody to hear this. Corporate America is a game. Work is a game. Life is a game. And there are people playing it in different ways. And if you don't know those ways, you will be left behind. So I say that to say that first one, the reason why that is the number one, the first cheat code, is because none of the other stuff can happen if you don't know those things. So the book was written in the five cheat codes that exist. There's like subchapters. You can pick up the book and read it if you want to just talk about politics. It's not a chronological book. If you don't want to read it that way, but the cheat codes are in order for a reason, because I think you need to do those five steps in that order to be successful as a leader, as a worker, as an employee, as a human, personally.
Yeah. Which I love this conversation because I'm learning more as we talk. I didn't know that about the, about the way that you listed them. So here's the deal. I have worked on myself a lot, continue to work on myself. When I was working in professional sports, I was not anywhere near where I needed to be in knowing myself and knowing my worth. Mm. And I will tell you, I opted out of the politics of things. And here's the folks, people who are listening, I think so many times people is like, oh, the politics are negative, negative, negative. I think what Raven is saying here is it's a game. And I often have likened it to like a chessboard. You just have to know who the other pieces are, where they are, where they're trying to go. Then when you think about it that way, you're like, oh, right, I get it. That's what I think you're meaning in it's a game, not always negative. And I didn't know myself and I didn't know my worth to the degree that I think could have served me much better than it did. And I opted out of those, a lot of those politics. You write in the book about like the going to lunch or going to golf and those type of things. I didn't do those things. I kept more to myself in ways. And so when you were writing it, I was like, you know, I have very few regrets in my world, in my life. And the thing that I guess I would say I regret is that I wasn't at that place to be able to participate in the way that would have served me more. I think I would have learned more. I think I would have been more impactful. So to your point, do the work sooner, folks. There's no better time like the present. Do the work sooner.
Yeah. So politics. I think the knowing yourself piece is just a reminder of who you need to come back to when you're playing the game. That makes sense. So yeah. If you have a clear, grounded reality in who you are and what your integrity, what your character is, you can put your head on the pillow at night if you're in a political organization, knowing that you did what you needed to do to get where you needed to go without compromising those things.
Yeah.
So what I will say is there's kind of four levels of politics in corporate America. Let's just start there, and probably in a lot of industries. You definitely don't want to be in the pervasive politics where it is dog eat dog. That is not a good situation to be in. It doesn't matter what your integrity and character. But there, because of the varying levels, I think politics is played in most places. Yeah. So you want to kind of skew towards the minimal politics. But how you do that is understanding what are the levers that you can pull with grace, with integrity, with character, so you can advance the ball and use a sports reference. And it's not easy. And I think sometimes because we get such a little amount of time to talk about the book and talk about my career, I always kind of just remind people, none of this is easy and none of this happened overnight. Yeah. I have a whole chapter dedicated to me resisting first, not understanding what game was being played and why individuals were going to play golf and why I wasn't invited. I didn't know what was happening. So that awareness is the first piece to understand what type of political organization you're a part of. But then the work to be done to figure out how you can do it with that grace and with that integrity and with a character that you know you can be proud of is a whole set of circumstances that you have to kind of come to terms with, and it is not easy. So I just want to reinforce that. Politics is, I just don't know any industry or company that it's not, I've never been a part of one. So if there is someone who is listening, please hit me up on Instagram or LinkedIn and let me know what organization you're a part of that with a significant number of employees, not one or two, but with a significant number of employees that does not have politics at play. The fifth cheat code is collecting advocates. And I think the way that you kind of navigate the world of politics is by having those advocates that who are in the political sphere, if you will, that have done it themselves, but also can coach you on how to do it.
Yeah. And the part in there that I've written out and I keep out in front of myself as I share with other people is what you wrote is about doing it without losing yourself in the process. So to your point about coming back to always coming back to who you are, you can play the game, but to do so authentically is to not lose sight of who you are.
That's right.
Yeah. So your career, I will say, we're going to hop to that. Your career has been remarkable, to say the least. Again, I know you are a very humble person, so I will say for you, not only have you worked in all of the major, you know, professional sports leagues, you've also been a sports business journal game changer, which, folks, if you're in the audience, you're not sure what that is specific. Sports Business Journal is the major publication in the industry, and they pick, I don't ever actually know the number now, I think the number that they pick of women each year, but it is an honor for women each year who are in the industry. I think it's like 30 or 40 people. You're also Milwaukee Magazine's Groundbreaker Betty Award winner. And this one, Adweek's Most Powerful Woman in Sports, which congratulations for all of what you've done. And that's just the top line, folks. But I say those things not to sort of like blow smoke at you. But it is like sometimes for people who are listening, it's like we're talking about a lot of things, and the impact that you've been able to make is not just with, you know, hidden. You talked about being private. These are not things that are hidden. These are this, you know, Raven, you've been able to do things and truly be a part of the change. So thank you for the work that you're doing. It's so necessary. And I'm curious, as you came up, when did you actually start seeing yourself as a leader?
So it's interesting. I played many sports growing up, but I was on a high school basketball team. And I remember not being selected as captain. And I was a leader. I was one of the leading scorers. I was really upset by that, but I didn't know why at that time. So I want to just put a pin in that.
Okay.
When I got to sports, thought I was going to be in optometry. There's a whole story there, but ended up settling for a $7.25 an hour job, selling tickets for a hockey team down in South Florida, the Florida Panthers, who are champion now, but they were not champions when I was selling. I recall when I was in the offices of the Florida Panthers, I remember seeing the office in the corner, and I remember seeing offices with people there, and I'm like, how did they get there? What is it that they are like doing? Because I want to be there. I didn't know why, but I recall that time not being selected as captain. It sounds really weird. And I said, what's not going to happen is me just sit back and not ask the question why I am not being viewed as a leader. So I did everything I could, at least in my little naive brain, to think of what does a leader look like? And my first try at it, I was terrible at it because I led like I had been led, which is by fear, by, oh my God, there's thousands of people that are waiting to take your seat in sales, which is like, that's just not, it's not how I lead. But I led like that. And it was not authentically me. And I felt like it wasn't, but I got feedback also that it wasn't. So when I got to the point where I could say who I was as a leader, doing the work to be more compassionate, more non-monolithic, to think that everybody on my team was the exact same, that's when I knew that I was leader, because I had done the work to say, oh, here is why I am one, and here's how I think I could be a better one than what I was led as. But I always went back to not speaking up for myself when I wasn't selected as captain in high school. And it's, you know, you talk about people who peaked in high school or whatever, but it's like, maybe I'm glad I wasn't, because I probably would have peaked and been so happy that I was captain. But so I first found out and first kind of dug into who I wanted to be, that very first job that I was called to be a manager, which was at the Florida Panthers many, many, many years ago.
Many, many years ago. It's so funny when you're saying, like, I made like $7 or something an hour. I think some people think that, like, oh, sports, working in sports is so great and whatever right off of the bat. I can't tell you how many years I made $30,000. Yeah. I mean, I was teaching yoga at night. I was doing all the things to be able to stay on that track. So it's just funny when you said that. I was like, oh God, those painful days.
Because the players are on TV and they're making a ton of money, and then they stop playing, and then that means you stop working. Like, no, that's not how it works.
That's not how it works, which is a whole other episode. But I'm curious, you know, earlier when we were talking, you said if someone else, if you don't figure out who you are and how you want to lead, how you want to be, someone else is going to define that for you. So in what you just described, I think that what you shared told me that you are very self-aware along the way. You're curious about yourself, not only curious about others, curious about those corner offices. And I am curious. Was it more that you discovered, had this discovery of the leader, or do you think it was someone else who said it to you?
Yeah, someone said that you should be a manager.
Ah.
But I also knew that I wanted to lead and coach others.
Okay.
I didn't know exactly what that would look like or what form it would take, whether it be one person or 10 people or whatever it may be. But I knew that I had more to offer than being a doer.
Got it.
So that work, to your point about being curious, I didn't want to be ill-prepared, even though in my preparation, I was still ill-prepared because I was trying to be like others. Yeah. But once I realized kind of the error in my ways, I'm like, if I want to do this the right way, I probably should listen to someone else or read something else or study someone else. But it's, I think those of us who are tapped as leaders, no. In deep
it's
down
in your bones, yeah.
Yeah, that it's a calling. I don't know that I could ever be a coach of a sport because I'm like obsessed with winning and those types of things, and it might not be good for the athletes, but I do think that I will always hopefully be seen as a leader that people want to follow.
Yeah, absolutely. And in sports business, I think that there is a perception, especially because a lot of times we're watching the games on TV in person, that there is a lot of representation. There is a lot of diversity. And I'm curious, is that reality? Are you starting to see some of that shifting? And I'll add to that is, I would assume, because it still happens to me. It still happens to me, folks, where I show up and I'm the only woman. It happens so many times. How do you deal with being, air quotes, the other in those moments?
Yeah. So to answer your first question, is it changing? I think slowly. It's definitely, you're starting to see more women in the C-suite in sports. You're starting to see more in certain leagues. I think there's some leagues that we're way behind. But as far as being the other or being the only, there's a bit of pride that comes in that. But there's also a bit of sadness that comes in that, because still to this day, if I'm the only, or if I'm the only other, it's kind of like, how are we still here? And what more can I do? So I immediately go into solution mode. And like, what am I going to do about this? And it's disheartening, truthfully. Yeah. It is, at this breakfast I was at, there were only 3 Black people there. Wow. Out of 75 people. And I'm like, what? Like, what? How are we still here? It gives me hope still, because I do see areas where we are advancing.
Yeah.
But we just need more of us so we can start to have the real conversations around how we make the change that we need to make.
Right.
Things like the Sports Business Journal, Game Changers, Adweek's Most Powerful Women in Sports. Like, there's a lot of us doing good work out here. We just need to do the work to bring others along. So when it's our turn to move on, we're just slotting another qualified, I want to be clear, because for some reason, diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging is a dirty word here. But I want to be clear that we are bringing qualified individuals to come in and run the show.
Yeah, absolutely. There is still so much work to be done. This is actually really truthful. I can't believe I'm going to say this out loud, but sometimes when I go to calls and I see the squares and it's all white men. A lot of times it's older white men, and I'm the only woman. Sometimes I literally will take a photo of the screen, which is so bad to say, but sometimes, because to your point, it is this weird mixture of feeling like disheartening. Are you kidding me? We are still here. We are almost in 2025. This shouldn't be the way. But at the same time, there is an element of I'm grateful to be here, because this is my opportunity. One, I work, to your point, I am qualified. I work to be in the positions that I find myself in. And at the same time, I'm like, well, if I'm in the room, then I can help bring others along. And where I find some light a lot of times is where the people who I've been around, to your point about advocates being so important, where a lot of those people who are in those seats are actually being advocates. They're wanting more. They're doing the work too. So I think folks who are listening, like, there's a lot of work to be done. There's a lot of improvement to happen. But I think everybody has, at this day and age, has a responsibility to make some change here.
Totally agree.
So I have taken a lot of your time, and I am so grateful for the conversation that we've had here. And as we wrap up here, one thing I really just love to do is to make sure that we're doubling down on some key takeaways for folks. So one, I would love to ask is, we've seen so much shift as we've been talking about, especially in women's sports. Like, you know, everybody's wearing the t-shirts, which I don't actually even have one yet. That's like, who, you know, everybody's watching women's sports. But
use that.
I know. I've got to get on top of that. But as you stepped into the seat of leadership at the Kansas City Current, you know, you've done so much. You launched, opened a new stadium. What do you want to see more of or less of from brands, media, and fans?
More watching and more consumption. So I think the big thing that's interesting is people support. It's clear that people are supporting women's sports. Like, it's, we're at the highest of the heights, and brands are, you know, obviously putting their money where their mouth is. How do we sustain that and make it a movement versus a moment? So buy tickets. Don't expect free tickets from a friend. Don't expect discounted tickets because it's women's sports. You know, we pride ourselves here at the Kansas City Current. We pride ourselves in making sure people understand that it's a business. You're going to get what you're paying for. The value is there, but we're not going to discount tickets just because it's the women playing. So I think consumption, and I think actually continuing to support, buy merch. To your point about everyone watches women's sports, that's awesome. But go to the New York Liberty site right now and buy a jersey. Go to the Kansas City Current site and buy a kit. Those are the things that show us that you're invested in us and not just supporting.
That is such a great point. That is such a great point. Folks, again, the things we've talked about today, one, buy Raven's book. I'm telling you, I have it on my like Christmas gifting list. But to that point, again, I think of how you can do more than just the surface level. Everything we've talked about here today, I hope that people who are listening, how can you actually internalize some of this and say, how can I take it to the next level? Get out of surface. I wrote something recently about surface sucks.
100%.
It really does.
No, it does no good for anyone.
Yeah. You're just kind of tiptoeing. Don't tiptoe, folks. Yeah, exactly. Okay, so closing out here, last minute takeaways related to more than representation.
Two things. We've said it over and over. Find out who you are before the world tells you who you are. And do the work and be really good at it. But also be able to tell the story about why you're good at it. If you do those kind of two things, the world will open up for you in a way that, one, you deserve, but also that will make the impact that we all need to make as we talk about advancing the ball and getting more representation in the C-suite and in leadership.
Thank you so much. And if there's anything left on takeaways related to leadership, specifically in sports,
stay the course. It's going, we talked about there's work to be done. I am seeing people come into this industry that want to change it for the better, that want to make us a more sophisticated and mature business, because the truth is, and you know this, Shauna, you know, on paper, a lot of us are valued high, right? As entities and as franchises, but there's work to be done with respect to running these businesses more efficiently, effectively, and being more productive so we can really drive the bottom line, because at the end of the day, we're still a business. So it gives me some hope that the people that are coming into the industry now are looking at it as a true business and not just a fun business.
Yeah, absolutely. Raven, thank you so much for your time today. Good luck in your final match of the game of the regular season tomorrow. Folks, thank you so much for joining today. Have an awesome day, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you, Shauna.